In this week's episode, we talk with Sam Dullinger, but you probably know him as White Rose Baseball. He creates some of the best baseball content on the internet. In this week's episode, we talk to him about how he gets to collab with the best baseball creators, how he comes up with video ideas, and his favorite moments from coaching at NYBC. Plus, we challenge him to blind rank some Platinum Glove Award winners. Let's jump into this week's episode of the Brouettes.
Guys, before we jump into today's episode, I got to tell you about our new sponsor. It is Stinger Sports. Guys, I got to tell you what I love about these guys. So first, I met Brandon, the founder of Stinger, through a mutual friend. We had him on the podcast, one of my favorite episodes. Make sure that you go and check it out. But we've developed not only a bit of a friendship, but now a partnership where we want to introduce everyone on the world to Stinger Sports because they make incredible athletic gear at an affordable price. And this is what I really love, because if you're a parent, you know how expensive gear is getting, how expensive uniforms are getting. And these guys make affordable stuff that is pro level quality. Right now, Colt is using one of their gloves. I mean, this thing is sick. Look how customized that is. And he's using this in 13U baseball right now, which is amazing. And then we also brought them on as a uniform sponsor. Look at these custom Stinger Sports bralette jerseys. How cool are these? And the best thing, they're not just for baseball. So baseball, soccer, volleyball, whatever that you need, they can equip you. But on the baseball side specifically, what I love is they will equip you with fully customizable jerseys, but also the pants, the hats. They will also get you the ancillary stuff like batting gloves or team backpacks or anything that you need. And they have packages that make it affordable for any family. Guys, you got to check out Stinger Sports. I will put the link in the description. Check these guys out. Make sure you tell them that the Brolet sent you. And please, please, please support our sponsors here. Check out what they're doing. Big fans of Stinger Sports. Now, let's jump into this week's episode. All right, man. So you're a big glove guy. And so what we wanted to start with is some blind ranking Platinum Glove Award winners. So these are the best of the best. We picked five guys from the past 10 years. So it's not every Platinum Glove winner, but we picked five. And you're going to blind rank them 5-1. You good to go?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, take it away.
All right, Kevin Kiermaier.
Man, Kevin Kiermaier is good. Outfield just isn't like, I don't get excited about a good play in the outfield because there's so much that happens in between the ball being hit and caught where I want it to be like instant. So I'm probably going to underrate Kevin Kiermaier and put him at 3. Yeah, we'll go 3. How many do we have?
5.
5.
5? Okay, yeah, I'll put 3. I'll put him 3.
We'll take, that's a good one. We'll take it.
Nolan Arenado.
Arenado's 1. That's the quick hitting, like, bat hits ball, ball hits glove. Nolan Arenado's a top 3 defensive third baseman of all time.
Good call.
Bobby Witt Jr.
Bobby Witt Jr. We'll go 2. We'll go 2. Shortstop. I'm trying to think back of, like, a couple of Platinum Glove winners. Not a lot of shorts. Yeah, we'll go 2. I feel good about 2.
Nice. We got 1, 2, and 3 locked in.
Andrés Jiménez.
We'll get 5. That's another like middle infield guy, but if I'm correct, he's like a lot more second base, which is probably a less premium defensive position. We'll go 5. Yeah, yeah. No disrespect to Andrés, but
somebody's got to go there, right? So
yeah.
Fernando Tatis Jr.
4. Yeah, I feel good about that because and another thing is like he's a versatility guy. Like he won the Platinum Glove in his first year in right field after being a shortstop his entire life. So I feel good about that. He gets a couple extra bonus points. It's probably less important of a position defensively than second base, but you get credit for moving from the infield and then winning the Platinum Glove in your first year in the outfield.
I like that. You give me those? Like those rankings?
I like that.
I like it. Good way to start, man. All right, I'll let you take it away.
How did you come up with your White Rose name and persona?
White Rose is something that's tied to the city that I'm from. It's a symbol that's all over the place here. So actually, when I started out, I wasn't doing content. I was making bats. That's kind of how I got my start. I was in college trying to find a way to make a little extra spending money. So I started making bats, and I wanted a name for the bat company that was tied to the place that I was from. Kind of like some of the great bat companies in the past have been like Louisville Slugger or Cooperstown Bat Company, like tied to the place that they're from. So I took, instead of naming it after the city that I'm from, I took the White Rose symbol, brought it to the bat company, and then during COVID, the price of wood just skyrocketed and made it impossible to sell bats for a reasonable price anymore. So we pivoted to social media and kept the white rose.
Love that. Great story.
In a video with Coach Rack, you mentioned that you played at a school so small, it wouldn't even be considered D3. Tell us about your baseball journey that led you to being a top baseball creator today.
I played travel ball all growing up, and I got to high school, and I ended up playing volleyball in high school. But baseball was still my passion. It just felt like there wasn't as much opportunity there. There were a lot of guys on the baseball team who were a little bit more athletic than I was, and I really wanted to play whatever I was going to be doing. So we went and played volleyball. And then while I'm graduating high school, I had the itch. I was like, I want to play baseball again. So I found a small school nearby so I could keep, you know, close to the family and doing stuff like that. And I think we had 700 kids at the whole school. So there was some opportunity there. We played a little bit of baseball and, that's kind of it. I always tell people, like, if you want to play college baseball, there's an opportunity for you somewhere. It might not be as glamorous or as exciting as you're hoping for, but if you want to play and you want to play, like, you want to be on the field, there's a match in somewhere, in some form of competitive baseball.
Glad you get to keep playing. Like, that's the thing, right? Like,
yeah.
For all of us, we want to, like, at my age now, like mid-40s, like, all I want to do is go back and play, be there with the boys, be there for those long, crappy, hot practices. And so if you can extend that even a little bit, you know, and now through content, you can do it too.
I still have 4 years of eligibility. Maybe we go back for the Masters and go play somewhere.
I love that.
Were your first YouTube video on your current channel was posted almost exactly 2 years ago? And your first show on Instagram was a few months before that. How did you get into the content game?
Yeah, so YouTube was something that nobody was really taking seriously as a way in when I started making content. There was so much opportunity on TikTok. So everybody was on TikTok. And then we had our first NYABC camp. And we were all just sitting around talking. And Rack was like, you know, guys, I've been posting all of my TikToks to YouTube and they didn't do anything at first, but I've got 15,000 subscribers now. And all of our ears kind of perked up where we were like, why aren't we cross posting everything? So we started posting the things that we were making for TikTok to YouTube. And now I've sort of shifted to focusing on YouTube with the short form and long form content that I'm making, trying to make it for YouTube. But as far as how I started content overall, it was one of those things where I felt like I grew up checking out books in the library on baseball and movie making were like the two things that I was really into. And then when it came time to go to college, I didn't want to go to college for like filmmaking. I'm like, that's not the thing that I like. And it turns out the thing that I like is just telling stories and having visuals that go along with them. So it was a natural kind of marriage. It wasn't like a thing where it's like, oh, maybe I'll start social media. It was kind of just something that I needed to do. And, you know, all the white rose stuff happened as a result. I like to tell people that, like, if I was really into like sewing instead of baseball, like I'd have like white rose sewing up and going right now.
It's a good name, can flow with any direction, you know?
Yeah, you could throw it on the end of anything.
We always love to hear how creators come up with ideas for their videos. You have some really good ideas, and not all your shorts are the same or follow the same format. How do you come up with ideas both for your long form and short form videos?
I focus on three groups of potential audience. There's like my core audience. They're the couple of people who check in every video and want to see what's going on every time I upload a video. There's the casual audience, who is casually a fan of baseball and maybe casually a fan of my videos, sees them every now and then. And then there's the new audience who perhaps doesn't know a whole lot about baseball or just has never heard of me before. And I try to think of everything I do, how can I capture their attention and also provide value to them? So when I'm going through video ideas, I really try to think, would this be exciting for like my grandma? Who doesn't watch baseball? Like, could she see the excitement between how we're gonna pit up this torpedo bat versus this regular bat? And I think my personal thing is I'm always going to get caught up in the nuances, and I'm going to want to explain the little differences between the torpedo and the regular bat. And I also got to realize that, like, most people aren't me, and most people don't care about those nuances. They just want to see the difference in look and performance and maybe understand a little bit more about the nuances. So I try to dial back my excitement to be a nerd and geek out on the tiniest little things, and try to tell a story that's just as exciting about the more broad ideas of a certain topic.
I love that. Kind of following up on that is, like, do you have an actual, like we've talked to some guys, was it Max Fries? He's like, I got my murder board behind me with, like, all of his ideas, like, that him and Schultz are, like, going through. And then, like, you know, some people got their Apple notes. Some people, like, is there any rhyme or reason? Because I know some of your stuff is, like, event-based, right? You have an NYABC coming up. Maybe you're going to a creator event. Like, that's not that that's easier, but that's, like, scheduled stuff. But then you're just like, all right, I need something today, right? Like, how are you thinking about organizing all that?
I have a notebook with about 300 video ideas in it, and I kind of separate them out into, like, long form, timely, long form evergreen, short form timely, short form evergreen. So an evergreen video is a video that I can make or post whenever, and it'll do just as well a year from now as it will, you know, right now this second. So that's kind of like some of the glove videos that I'm doing. They're not really dependent on a timeline, versus like a timely video would be eating the Dodger dogs. So I was like, I'm going to be in Dodger Stadium. I've got to make this video right now. Or it could be based around something that's happening. I just did a video about Kike Hernandez and Paez in the World Series, and I was like, this needs to be uploaded today or I'm not going to do it. So it's one of those things where some things require immediate attention, but I still have 200 videos that I haven't made yet that I really want to make in a notebook somewhere.
Do you think about format at all? Like, as I was just opening up, like, even just on Instagram, like, some videos have a consistent format, like the glove stuff, right? Like, I think those are a little consistent. Sometimes the bat ones are a little consistent, but, you know, like you said, you mentioned the one about Game 7, that was just kind of a green screen. You had another green screen before that, and then there's no other green screens, you know, for like a while, you know, as you scroll down. So how do you think about formats, or do you not? Is it more just like the idea, like, hey, I have a great idea, I want to go for it, versus trying to make it easier for you to be like, all right, every Monday's Glove Monday? Like, that might be a bad example, but you get where I'm going with it.
Actually, during the season, you're not wrong. During the season, I was uploading a glove video on Tuesday, and then experimenting with something on Thursday. So, like, because the glove videos, I know how to make them. So I know exactly what I need to do to have some level of success that week. And then Thursday would be like, one week I, like, bought a lemonade at a baseball game trying to beat the pitch clock between innings. One week I went to Walmart to see what kind of, like, deals there were there. And so some of those videos are formats that you'll see come back next year. The pitch clock one, I tried to do a follow-up on, and then I beat it too easily, and I was like, well, that wasn't fun. Like, now you're just watching me buy a lemonade. Like, but I think, like, where I go to Walmart and kind of check out the deals there they have for baseball equipment, we might bring that back in other stores. And there are certain things that you saw a little bit of last year that'll probably become regular formats this year, some blitzball stuff and things like that. But I do try to, like, do something I haven't done once a week, and then do something I have done either once or twice a week during the season. So it's always that battle of, like, you want to retire a format while it's still fresh, so you also want to have new formats coming in that you can depend on.
Yeah, smart. I like that. I like that one kind of consistent piece every week. Your audience knows what's coming, and then allows you to kind of experiment and figure out new stuff. I like that little cadence there. Super smart.
Everybody kind of has a feel for. And then when it comes to the first couple of seconds of the video, I'm basically trying to give an opinion that's, you know, somewhat controversial. Not like I'm trying to be controversial, but I'm giving an opinion that I know everybody doesn't agree with. And then I'm giving some sort of caveat or the reason for it. So Matt Stone and Trey Parker are the guys who created South Park, and they did a storytelling workshop where they go through the beats of a story And they're like, between every one of these beats, the words like but, so, therefore should fit in. He's like, if the word and goes between these beats better than any of those words, we cut it from the story because it's actually not part of the story. We're just introducing something new. So I think for the pitch clock video, I said, I actually love the pitch clock in baseball, which is true. I do. And not everybody does. So I actually love the pitch clock in baseball, but it's really hard to get up out of your seat because you feel like you miss half the game. So today I'm going to put to the test, you know, how quick I can get out of my seat without missing any of the game, something like that. But the idea is basically introducing a concept that you know people have an opinion on and then elaborating on it in a way that actually builds on the thing that you introduced instead of being like, I actually like the pitch clock in baseball and I'm hungry. I'm like, I actually like the pitch clock in baseball, but it's really hard to get out of your seat. So today I'm going to test if I can get out of my seat without missing any of the game. And you're just building on the first thing that you introduced the whole way throughout the video.
Man, that's so smart. Love that storytelling philosophy. When you're thinking about hooks, are you testing anything really? Like, so let's say like the glove, like one of the recent glove ones, like you're showing the glove off, right?
Yeah.
That's the opening scene though. And like you mentioned earlier, like, you know, gloves, stuff falling out of the sky, things like that. Are you shooting 3, 4, 5 hooks and rolling with the best? Or do you kind of have an idea in your mind of what you're trying to accomplish?
The beautiful thing about doing voiceover is that I really don't know what I'm saying when I'm filming video. I'm like, let me film the video and then the story can kind of reveal itself to me. That sounds so pretentious, but like the story will happen and then I will be able to tell that story better after the fact to know what details stay in, what details come out. As far as like the first couple frames, the visual hook, I usually go into it with an idea of like, okay, I want this to be the first shot of the video. And sometimes I'll find one that really works and I'll do it a couple of times, but then eventually I'll be like, I've got to also make some of these look different, partially to keep things fresh and also partially because I don't want people to see a new video and think that they're seeing the same video that they've seen before and scroll away without even realizing that it's a new video. So there's a little bit of finding something that works. And then I guess that's kind of my philosophy on content in general is find something that works and then retire it before it gets old and find something new, whether that's in the video concepts as a whole or even just like the intro shots of the video.
Nice. Love that.
We got to talk collabs. Have you been able to collab on videos with some of the biggest names in baseball content like Eric Sim, D-Storm, and Kotrak?
Oh, man. I've just got some really good buddies. I think the best way to say that is like, you know, when we did the first NYABC camp, D-Sarm had 12,000 subscribers on YouTube, Rack. I mean, he was popping because he had the Nationals, signing video and stuff, but he was still coaching. Like, actually, I don't even think he was coaching JV baseball yet. So a lot of those guys are just people who, you know, we all became friends really early on in our journeys. And then someone like King of JUCO, it's like, I don't say no to anything. So I don't say no to events. I don't say no to podcasts. I don't say no. Like, I really want to do everything that I can. And in doing that, you know, you end up meeting a bunch of super cool creators and kind of forming relationships with them. The King of JUCO collab happened because my buddy J-Lab challenged him to live at bats. And, you know, I just happened to be in the area too. So I pulled up to that with them and snuck a collab in there without, you know, necessarily doing any of the groundwork myself. So it really is just like, you can't say no when an opportunity pops up unless there's like an actual reason to say no. And also just ask, like, you know, just ask people if they want to do stuff. Usually if I find somebody who I think is making really cool content, it doesn't matter to me the number of followers they have. If they have 100 followers and I think they're making great content, I'll be like, let's do something. If they have 100,000 followers and I think they make great content, I'll be like, let's do something. And whoever responds back, we do a collab.
Nice. Love that.
I know a lot of young creators would love to do collabs with their favorite creators or athletes. What tips do you have that might help them make it happen and get someone to say yes to creating content together?
This is something I learned from Arak. If you're familiar, he's kind of like a Mr. Beast-esque YouTuber. His thing was, you have to provide some kind of value to another creator in order for them to want to do a collab. So either your audiences are similar size and there's going to be a cross-pollination value, or alternatively, you give them content, basically. Like, you have a way that you're making content that also gives them an opportunity to make content without having to do any of the groundwork to get something off the ground that's kind of sensational. Or, sometimes it's just like someone doesn't have any content to post. It's like, well, we can collab post on, you know, this thing that I'm making, and I'll take all the work of making the content out of it for you. I think Arak's example is like, he went to David Dobrik's house with, gosh, I don't even remember, like it might have been a Lamborghini or something. But now David Dobrik's got something to talk about in his vlog. Someone showed up and tried to give me a Lamborghini. Or his first big video was the couch series, where Logan Paul was selling like a $20,000 couch. So he took out a loan from the bank and went and bought it, because now he's got a video to make. I bought Logan Paul's couch. But Logan Paul, who was a daily vlogger at the time, now has something happening in his vlog. This guy who keeps showing up to his events has now shown up to his house and bought his couch for $20,000. So the best way to make a collab happen is to have a way for them to get something out of it. And it's not necessarily just in audience size, because I think that's how a lot of people think of it, but also just in having like a good piece of content that they can make out of whatever you guys are doing together.
Man, that's so smart, because there's, as a creator, like, we need stuff to create all the time. So if you're coming to me with an idea, you know, and you're going to make my life easier, and you also make it easy for me to say yes, right? Like, if you show up to my house with a Lamborghini, I'm posting about it, right? Like, just right, right. There's no doubt about that, right? So if you show up to a baseball field, like, you know, one of the ones with Sim, you had that big, like, the big wood bat with the big thing on the end. I forgot what it was, but we were just watching that this morning. But, like, you made it easy, like, hey, take a swing on this, and if you hit it, I'll post your face as my profile. Like, it gives him an easy way to say yes. Right.
And the other part of it, too, is that I just showed up to that field without telling him. And we kind of had a relationship from doing the Going Yard Home Run Derby. But he planned to do content that day with J-Lab, who's a pitcher who makes content. So J-Lab, you know, put on his story, you're in town for the Little League World Series, like, come take live at bats if you're not scared. Well, the reason that that collab happens is because Sim needs arms to hit off of for his content as well. So he's providing a value to him outside of like a massive audience size, because if you're trying to match an audience with like King of JUCO or like John Boy or Coach Rack or the Baseball Bat Bros, you're not going to be doing a whole lot of collabs. But if you can find a way to give those guys some sort of value, like if I really wanted to do a collab with like Will from the Baseball Bat Bros, I'd find some sort of bat that he's never swung before, and I'd be like, I've got this. Let's see if you can hit with it. You know what I mean? And that's how you want to do some of the work for them to make making content easier, because that's how you can provide value to a larger creator that you want to do a collab with.
Yeah, I think the other big thing you said there is show up, right? Show up where your action is. Like, one of the big things that's been beneficial to us is Pottstown plays in our backyard 2-3 times a year. And so whenever Pottstown plays, they're bringing the guest coaches and the creators. And so, you know, from the very first ever Pottstown tournament, he was like, hey, we got to go. I'm like, who are these people? Like, who are these? You know, and that's what got me into this world. But, you know, he takes a picture with Adam 1 year, then he comes back, and then hey, Adam, can I just ask you a couple questions? And then Aiden's there, and then Schultz is there. And then like, but for you, it was the same thing. Like, hey, Little League World Series, they're going to this park. I'm just going to show up. Like, I think half of the battle is just showing up and being where the action is, you know, go to Omaha, go to the Little League World Series, go to the All-Star Games, because that's where everybody is. And if you can find ways to add value to them, it makes it that much easier for them to say yes.
We did the first NYABC. That's what this picture's from. But we did the first NYADC while I was still in college, and it was across the country. It was kind of like a situation where I was given the opportunity to do something that on paper probably made no sense to a lot of people who knew me in real life. It was like, You're going to fly to California and like spend the $75 you have in your checking account to go hang out with a bunch of strangers. And it was like, yeah, this is a no brainer for me. Like, this is what I want to do. And obviously that has resulted in some of the best friendships in my life, but also like some of the best creator collaborations. So
that's awesome. Love that.
Can you go through your process of making a long form video, going from the idea that we talked about to actually planning, filming, and editing, plus the gear and tools you use?
Yeah. So I'm still ironing out the process for making good long form. It's really, really hard to make good long form. But I can tell you, I take one of those ideas that I have written down in that notebook, and then I think of three different titles for that video. And now you can actually ABC test title ideas in YouTube, which is great. So I think of three different titles, and then I draw up three different thumbnail sketches before I ever think about recording, before I ever set up dates. I have three thumbnails and three titles for that video idea. Then I go through and I'm like, I will actually script the intro the first 10, 15 seconds to make sure I get that right. And then try to storyboard a little bit. Recently, I went to Charlie Rose and filmed with a guy there, 914 Ball Gloves. Makes great content on YouTube, short form, long form, everything. But I knew there were certain segments I wanted. I wanted to see their break in service because that's a big service they offer there. I wanted to go through and look at some of their most expensive gloves because they have all types of gloves there. And then I also wanted to walk around and showcase some that I found interesting. So with those three segments in mind, I knew how I had to film those. But then when I go back and edit, I'm actually thinking about them like three short form videos that I'm just putting together. So that's a big part of the process for people who come from short form. And when you're starting out, it makes it a lot easier if you think of it like 3 to 5 short form videos that you're just stitching together. I think Rack did the same thing when he was starting out with his stadium vlogs, was like, okay, we've got a number of challenges and that's going to flesh out our long form video. So when you're getting started, I think that's a good place to start.
Nice.
How do you think about the difference in long form versus short form? Which one do you think is more important to your brand long term? And how do you think about, how do you make time do both?
Long term, I think long form is the future, which is crazy because I don't do very much of it. But I think that is where almost everybody needs to be looking, is to how can we adapt this into long form? Because it's really hard to make a connection with your audience over 30-second increments. But it's really easy if you can sit down for 10 minutes and talk to them and make something out of that. So yeah, I think long form's the future. And as far as like trying to balance the two, it's just finding a schedule that you can stick to for a period of the year and being like, no matter what happens, this number of short form videos is coming out, this number of long form videos is coming out, here's the cadence, and just trying to make that work. And I think he said something about equipment at some point. I don't remember if I answered that, but I do everything on my phone. I'm a freak in that way. It's super uncommon, but for me, I kind of ask myself, what's the value that I provide to my audience? And I try to be the guy that when kids are watching content, they get to experience things or see things that they wouldn't get to experience or see otherwise through my eyes. So it's kind of like I'm trying to be a vessel in which people can experience things that they wouldn't get to. So doing everything on my phone, I feel like makes it feel a little more attainable or a little more normal than if it was like this big production thing. Well, now you're kind of separated again because that's not something you can necessarily do if you're just sitting at home. Like, you don't have 5 cameras and you don't have mics and stuff like that. So everything I do is on my phone for the purpose of making it feel still like kind of like a small community, you know. This is our little thing. I'm bringing you in. Like, you're my friend. Like, let's check this out.
Nice.
How do you think about the business of content, from going to your channel to brand deals or making a career as a full-time content creator?
Yeah, that's interesting. So in terms of where money comes from on content, you basically have AdSense, brand deals, and then creator goods, basically. As far as where the balance is for where the money comes from for everybody, those things are all different. There are some creators who I know who are super successful on long form, and they really don't do any brand deals. But there are other people I know who, like, their whole career is on brand deals, you know, codes, potentially a soft good or service that they have or sell. And that's one of those things where I think the most important thing you can do as a creator while you're coming up is say, I'm not going to worry about the business side until it starts happening, right? If you go out there and try to make a business out of it right away, you'll probably strike the wrong balance of those things for you. But if you put yourself in a position where you're like doing content without an expectation of return, it reveals itself over time of like, okay, so I'll take a brand deal for this type of video and I'll work with this type of brand who wants this kind of thing. Or maybe it's like, oh, maybe I'll do a limited launch of this product or maybe this program or service or whatever. But for everybody, it looks super different. And it's one of those things that you just kind of figure out as you go on. And eventually you build it to a point where if you don't put any pressure on it, like early on, if you know where the money's coming from outside of content, it comes to a point where it strikes its own natural balance and it puts you in a position where you can switch to content full time.
Yeah, I think he said a couple super interesting things there. And it's the one thing I've been telling him about is like the longer you can wait to monetize, the better you're going to be.
Yeah.
It's hard because we all have to pay bills, right? And like life costs money. But, you know, I'm telling him like he's 13 and I'm just like, dude, by the time you're 16, if we do, you know, we do an episode a week, 50 episodes a year, after 3 years, you got 150 episodes in the bag. You got the YouTube channel going, you got the clue. Like, then you can think about, and even at 16, that's probably still too young, right? But like, it's just this idea of if you can play that long game, but it's so hard to play the long game because everything's seductive and you're like, you'll pay me what to do what? Like, you know, but I think the longer you can wait, the better. My kind of follow up on that is like, we're both in the kind of in the baseball space, and, you know, the creators who are actually doing this at a high level who are getting paid for it, like, you can name them on, you know, one or two hands, right? And especially getting past that million mark, you get the Racks of the world, the Baseball Bat Bros of the world, the Sims of the world. Like, there's not 100 of us, right? And so, like, how do you see, even just as you think about it, like, how do you see even where you fit into that? And is there room to do this long term in that space? Or is it more of a conduit for you to find the next thing that you want to, like, you're a young guy, just getting out of college, just getting done playing college, like, you got a long life ahead of you. But like, do you see it as a conduit for like finding the next thing? Or is this the thing? And maybe you don't have that answer yet. Maybe you're still figuring that out, which there's also nothing wrong with.
Yeah, I've been super fortunate to have certain things go just like land in a super lucky way when it comes to content. Obviously the clips page is out there and does a ton of views, which definitely makes it easier for me when I want to sit down and I'm like, let me think of what videos I actually want to make. Mm-hmm. That gives me an opportunity to like take a deep breath and be like, I can make my real content however I want, because I don't have to worry as much about what the returns on that are going to be. And sometimes I'll have an idea for a video and I'll have a concept that I really like, and there's just a marriage and a brand deal that just makes sense. And those are the kind of deals that I look for in terms of like doing brand deals or stuff that I'm making this video either way. Do you want in on it? So I think long term, like, I think I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. Like, I love it too much to stop. And if it keeps the roof over my head, we'll keep doing it until it doesn't. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for real.
You also have a clipping channel that has a ton of followers on Instagram. Where does that play in your content mix?
I don't know. I kind of hate it. No, I love giving my takes in like a super concise way, because I can just sit down and talk for an hour about like a nuance of a specific play in baseball and like be like, look at this, like, you know. So being able to just dial that down to one sentence is I think it's good for me. But I don't know what happens to the clips channel long term. I love having those little videos and those little opinions. And people seem to like it, you know, it does well. So I'll probably, it'll be around. I don't have any specific plans for it in the future other than to be an outlet for, I used to just message like group chats every time something interesting happened in baseball. And I would do that a lot. So I feel like the clips page is a good, good place to vent all of those little baseball thoughts that aren't necessarily worthy of a whole sit down and write a script type of video.
Nice.
Before we head out, you got to tell some of your favorite moments or stories from NYBC.
Oh, man. Oh, there's so many. Like, I cannot understate how much I love those guys. And I can't overstate it either, because that's impossible. But, man, yeah, I think there are certain things where it's not even necessarily the things that... Yeah, wow, what a good question. Favorite moments from NYABC. It's usually we'll sit down and someone will be like, well, I kind of have this idea about this certain thing. I'm not sure if it'll work. And it's something that's like a fleeting thought. And then we'll see each other 6 months later and it'll be like, so that thing really worked. And it's like, okay, cool. So you get to grow and see the creative process of the coaches as they go. I will say last NYABC, I'm going to take my headphones out for 1 second because I'm going to grab something. Last NYBC, this kid Hayden drew a picture of me and gave it to me on the first day of camp. So that's up there with the top moments of NYBC all time. Super proud of this picture. I have it on my fridge right now, but
kind of cool. A
little bit of fan art, which is like so crazy to me. So super excited.
Man, that's cool. I'm sure those are like the little moments. Like now, obviously, coaching him and two younger brothers, like those are the little moments that like just stick with you forever. And the difference that you make, super, super cool. Let's run into some rapid fire. We'll let you get on with your day. And just kind of first thing that pops in your head.
Let's do it.
If you had a limited budget to spend on content, what would you spend it on?
World Series games, content houses, trips with other creators. Be like, here's a vacation house. Here's 20 of us. Let's go make some content for a week and a half. Yeah, that's where the budget would go immediately.
Heck yeah.
What's your favorite glove?
Favorite glove. Perfect question. It's right in front of me. This is a DC Gloves original. There's this guy, Devin Colley, on Instagram, who I describe him as a freak. He's just a freak. He's a crazy guy. He has a bunch of crazy ideas. He hand-dyed, hand-customized this glove, and it's freaking beautiful. I love that guy.
It's beautiful. Love that.
What's your favorite video you created?
Favorite video? Oh, man. Favorite video I've created? I really like the one where I buy a lemonade. Like, honestly, I really like that video. It just turned out exactly how I wanted it to be. There's also, I did a video about like my last at bat while I was playing with the melon heads against the pickles. That one, I think the execution on that turned out really well. So one of those two, probably.
Nice.
What's the best advice you've gotten from a coach or mentor?
Best advice I've gotten from a coach or mentor. I had a really good friend in college. This was probably my best friend in college. I did something mildly embarrassing. And a couple hours later, I was kind of sitting on the couch with my hand over my eyes, like, oh, I can't believe I did that. And he said to me, people don't care about you as much as you think they do, which is a thought process that will set you free. The moment that you realize that, like, people actually aren't worried about the mistakes that you've made, the moment you're more comfortable making them. And obviously, if you're comfortable making mistakes, you will grow. Like, you will achieve and experience things that you wouldn't have let yourself before when you were afraid of messing up.
Nice.
Who would be a dream guest coach at NYABC?
Dream guest coach at NYABC, Buck Showalter. Ooh. Oh my gosh. Get that guy at a camp. I'd love to have him there. That would be so cool.
What's a big content goal for 2026?
Big content goal. Figure out long form. Have a long form video just pop off and then I'll feel like I did it. I'll feel like I understand it fully.
Love that, man. Thanks so much for doing this. Obviously, we'll link up all the socials as we head out. Just anything that we didn't cover that we need to plug or anything fun you got going on that we didn't talk about. But this has been a blast, man.
No, yeah, this is the best. I don't have anything to plug, but just a shout out to you guys. Love seeing like you guys doing this together, and I hope that's something that you continue to do for 10 years. So, you know, it'll just be something that keeps growing and something you guys get to continue to share and keep doing this thing, because there's so much more value in what you have going on than anyone will be able to tell you. It's only limited by what you guys want to do with it.
Yeah, love that answer, man. And that's kind of the plan. I tell him, like, in this, 45-minute interview, he's learned more about business and content and relationships and all that than he would, you know, sitting in a classroom. Not that the classroom stuff isn't important, but, you know, these things are pretty awesome.
Never get caught up in followers. Learn from everybody. That's the thing that I tell people Coach Rack does the best, is he listens to every single person who has an idea or opinion and goes from there. Status means nothing. People mean everything. You know, keep doing what you're doing, man. And I'm sure this is going to be like the number one baseball podcast in a couple years. So this is so cool.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem.
Hey, man, enjoy your Thanksgiving. Hope you have a great week with the fam and everybody you're celebrating with. And we'll touch base real soon.
Absolutely. Same to you guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.